Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again.
Unbelievable.
Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe in myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 210 of the Last Round Podcast. Thank you again for joining us, whether you're listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Audio Boom, wherever you're at, however listening, we appreciate it. Also, before we jump into our normal reviews, previews, and news of what's going on in the sport of boxing, go ahead and listen to our bonus show. We have a bonus show that's also uploaded with Mr. St. Laurent of Major League Wrestling. He tweeted out some pretty big news involving Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder in a possible matchup in the Middle East in the second half of this year. He expanded on that in that bonus episode. He went through his background, his career, and he's a pretty big boxing fan. He's a very, very hardcore boxing fan. So, which should be a good surprise to everybody. So he's a big fan of boxing and also professional wrestling, being involved over there, Major League Wrestling. So go check that out. Go check out that bonus episode. It's very, very insightful and detailed, and you'll learn a lot, especially behind the whole tweet for the whole Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder. But jumping right back into it, fight review this past Saturday, the 25th of February, from the Armory in Minneapolis, Minnesota, on Showtime, Subriel Matias gets the TKO victory over Jeremias Ponce, who takes the first professional loss of his career. Matias, I believe I'm saying that right, is now the IBF super lightweight champion of the world. I don't think this is an interim belt, or is this the full belt?
It was the full belt due to Josh Taylor not fighting his mandatory. So he ended up relinquishing the belt. And Matias and Ponce both fought for that belt on the weekend.
So Matias dropped Ponce on his way to the victory. And I believe, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Ponce's corner stopped the fight. Is that correct?
Yeah, Ponce's gonna stop the fight. I think it was the end of the fifth round after him taking some punishment. It was a good fight, though. You could see that early on, Ponce was like, you know what? I'm going to try to bully the bully. You know, try to get him onto his back foot just to see what Matias could do with that. But yeah, Ponce gave it a good shot. And then I just couldn't really put a dent in him. And I think after that, it was kind of like, you know, when you have that nightmare, when you punch someone, it doesn't affect him. It was kind of like that. You know, he was kind of like, oh, wow, this is going to be a long night's work. Matias and ended up just breaking him down, and I think the corner probably did the right thing and pulling Ponce out to that age-old question, you know, go out on your shield or do you live to fight another day? And they chose to live to fight another day. So still a good fight, though.
Like the nightmare Chris Areola? Is that who you were referring to
when
you
exactly said local guy, local to us, Riverside?
Local Southern California guy, the nightmare Chris Areola, former heavyweight world title challenger. So Matias has now, over the span of, you know, 24 hours, has now elevated his name and his profile in boxing, especially within the 140-pound division, now holding one of the more one of the significant world titles in boxing, in the IBF super lightweight title that you mentioned that Josh Taylor vacated. So Matias now has a target on his back, obviously. Everybody's after the champions. Where does he rank, in your opinion, at 140 pounds after this past weekend's victory?
I would say he's got to be up there, top five at least. You know, Josh Taylor, Jack Catterall, Teofimo Lopez, maybe. We haven't really seen him at 140 yet, but not in there with anyone, obviously, of any note. And then Regis Progre, right?
Who do you favor him over out of those names you just mentioned?
Maybe Teofimo Lopez.
You you think he stops him, or you think it's a...
Just he's so heavy-handed, and Teofimo can't get hit. You know, Teofimo was hit, you know, several times, and obviously his worst performance was obviously during George Kambosos. So Tio can be hit. Jack Catterall's a pretty slick mover. Josh Taylor can be a slick mover. You know, obviously he kind of got hit a little bit too much when he was with Ben Davidson. Regis Progre is just maybe the best at 140 after his recent performance. You know, I think everyone saw, you know, what it, even after that long layoff, he still got it. So, but Regis Progre did call out Mateus on Twitter afterwards, said that he likes it. Give me that fight. So that's going to be interesting. You know, I know Jack Catterall was also rumored to fight Regis Progre. You know, it looks like we're going to see Josh Taylor, Teofimo Lopez. So hopefully we see a mixture of Jack Catterall, Regis Progre, and Mateus, you know, some type of round robin between those guys.
Well, all those guys, unfortunately, are all associated with different, I guess, promotional aspects within the sport. So how likely is it that we see, for example, Mateus, I hope we're saying that right. I heard it, before over the weekend, but it's overlooking me how they pronounced it. So I apologize. But okay, let's just say Mateus gets a fight with one of those guys. Who's the more realistic option? Because they're all on different ends of the promotional spectrum.
Regis Progre.
You think so? I mean, he is loosely, you want to use the word loosely, still affiliated with ProBellum and, you know, MTK, even though they're not in existence anymore, but there's still some type of connection there, at least from what we understand. Does that affect a PBC negotiation, a Showtime negotiation?
I don't think so. I think MTK probably, when they were around, shared their toys a lot more than, you know, other people do. You know, I think a lot of people want to make fights with PBC. You know, they say no. So then, you know, in the future when PBC maybe want to make a fight with them, they're like, well, no, because you didn't make one with us when we wanted to. Kind of that sort of attitude, it seems. But I think with Regis Progre kind of not really being with one of the big promoters at the minute, I could see that being made.
Yeah, I guess if you look at it like that. But I think from Mateus, it's like I said, he elevated his profile in the span of, you know, 24 hours. Now having one of the major world titles at 140 pounds. So is this the only title that Josh Taylor, as of today, that he's vacated?
WBC was dropped as well, and Regis Progre won that.
Okay, so the IBF, WBC have been vacated, but he hasn't vacated the WBO and WBA?
I believe
he was, because he was undisputed, right?
Yeah.
So he's still holding on to those.
I believe he still has those other two, yeah. I'm just checking now, but I'm pretty sure that he has those remaining two.
So can we confidently say, or comfortably, I guess, that Josh Taylor will be moving up possibly to 147? If not, maybe a catchweight fight, 144, 145. What do you think?
Sorry, the WBA is held by Alberto Puello.
That's, yeah. That new, I had a feeling. I was like, I don't think the WBA is with
just,
him, but it
just
could
the
be.
WBO. Josh Taylor, it looks like, I think I put it in the news and notes, that I think ESPN are reporting that the fight with Teofimo Lopez is scheduled for like June, I believe. Then, you know, maybe he'll move up. But, you know, I think everyone was looking at, you know, Josh Taylor fighting Terence Crawford, and some other news we're probably going to talk about later. You know, Terence Crawford looks to be, you know, pushed towards purse with bids with our friend of the show, Alexis Rocha, which I'm sure we're all, you know, pleased with. That's going to be a big fight for Lex. So, yeah, maybe Josh will stay at 140 for a little bit longer now that the belts have kind of spread. That gives him maybe a different batch of opponents to fight. You know, Regis Progre is back in the mix as well. That would be a big fight. You know, they've got previous, which obviously makes it, you know, maybe potentially an even bigger fight because the first one was so close. So if I was Josh and you could, and if you can make 140 quite comfortably, you know, why not stay there for a little bit longer?
Who's okay? Let's just say, let's take Regis Progre out of the equation because we, I think we've all, me and you at least, have agreed that he's number one in terms of the best 140 pounder in the world. Who's number two right now?
See, I want to say Josh Taylor, but on, well, that, last performance, you know, against Jack Catterall.
But even taking Josh Taylor out of the equation, because it's highly likely that he's moving up. Who's number two?
Without Josh Taylor and without Regis Progre, right?
Well, yeah, because I mean, we've already said Progre is number one. Taylor, I mean, he'd be right there too, but assuming, just based on everything we know, that he's moving up, who's behind Progre right now at 140 pounds?
I'd have to go with either Jack Catterall or Jose Ramirez.
Come on, you need to pick one.
Going off, because all we could go off is their last performance. Jack Catterall?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true. 2A, 2B, maybe? Him and Ramirez? Just,
and I only say that because Ramirez probably has a bigger resume of work to look at. You know, he's just been in with probably some bigger names because Jack, you know, was just fighting who was put in front of him for the longest time and then eventually got that one big fight and shocked everybody, you know, quite handily beat. Josh Taylor was essentially robbed, right, on the scorecards. So that's why I'm kind of hesitant to put in there just because it's kind of that one big fight. But all we can go off is his, you know, his last piece of work, and that last piece of work was pretty goddamn good.
How do you think Ryan Garcia would do at 140? He's fought there, I think he's had one or two fights, couple at 140 so far. But once he stays there, how does he develop?
Against the big boys, against those batch of fighters?
Yeah.
The thing about Ryan is, in my opinion, I think he's very hit and miss because he has that knockout power. But it's just, can he get that set up? Because, you know, he's very flat-footed. Doesn't really have much of a jab, more just throws that kind of, you know, lead hand as a rangefinder, ready for that backhand. And I think people who stick and move are going to give him a lot of, you know, a lot of trouble. So like someone like a Jack Catterall, I don't think would be clever for him to fight. Josh Taylor on his day. That's an interesting one. He's so hit and miss. I'm going to kind of sit on the fence a bit. I think he'll beat some, but he'll lose to others. It just really depends on the opponent to put in front of him, really, on that day. I mean, he's big enough and probably strong enough to be at that level. You know,
That's what I think.
Already tall, so you know, when he fills out over time, I'm sure he'll go up to it, and then maybe even 147. It's just going to be interesting. You know, he's still got a lot of room to improve, I think.
Right, yeah. But I think, as we touched on, Matias has really elevated his name, and he was impressive. He was very impressive this past Saturday on Showtime. So, you know, now let's see if he can keep that momentum going at 140 pounds, which is one of the. I mean, would you say it's one of the more exciting divisions right now?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, assuming these cross promotional fights can be made. You know, if the Showtime news, the Paramount merger or whatever's happening over there, if by the end of this year there's no more Showtime boxing, maybe they, you know, they suffer the consequence that HBO boxing suffered 5 years ago or so, then I guess if you look at it in that aspect, a lot of these fighters who have been fighting on Showtime, PBC, will essentially be forced to fight on these with these other promoters or on these other broadcasters. So in a way it opens up the door to more intriguing fights across the aisle. So if you look at it that way, from some type of positive, even though losing Showtime, boxing on Showtime obviously sucks. You know, it's another HBO. But some type of silver lining is these fighters and these promoters are going to be backed into corners where, like, okay, we have to at least work with these other guys now, because we're one man down in terms of broadcaster and all that. So we will see. Moving on to this past Sunday, the 26th of February, from Saudi Arabia, in the United States, it was on ESPN pay-per-view. Tommy Fury remains undefeated at 9-0 with a split decision win over Jake Paul, who takes the first professional loss of his early boxing career. Tommy Fury got scores of 76-73 twice, and then 75-74, which was for Jake Paul. The referee was very, we'll dive into it in a second, but he was very involved in this fight, if that's how we want to put it. Both fighters at different points were deducted a point for fouls. And then also Tommy Fury was down in round 8. It looks like it was in the middle of an exchange of two jabs, and Paul just beat him to the punch and put him down. But Tommy Fury got right up, so it looked like maybe like a flash knockdown. Tommy Fury was obviously emotional as soon as his name got announced. And you can tell it affected him a lot, and he was very, very excited for the win. There was a lot of people who didn't agree with our assessment. And some people, you know, based on if you monitor the social chatter, that Tommy Fury shouldn't be considered an actual professional fighter. And this wasn't a real professional fighter test for Jake Paul. Do you agree or disagree with that? I gave him the credit and said, well, he has, you know, he is a professional fighter. I gave him the credit, but some people disagree. What do you think?
He's a low level professional fighter. I can see where people are coming from. He's not going to be a world champion. You know, he'd probably struggle to win an English or a British level. You know, he essentially did similar to what Jake did. You know, he became pretty famous from reality TV. He's also obviously Tyson Fury's, you know, younger brother, and kind of used that to open the door to earn some, you know, good money in the world of boxing. Kind of like what Jake did. You know, Jake probably realized, you know, I can earn a lot of money by being a celebrity and jumping in the boxing ring and earning what, supposedly $20 million after the pay-per-view. I saw quoted today. You know, it's amazing money for, you know, for him, and especially, you know, that two novice level fighters fighting each other. I mean, I didn't think the fight was that bad. You know, if you get two whatever level people and they're evenly matched, the fight can always be good. You know, sometimes you get two world-class fighters and the fights don't gel, you know, and the fight's terrible. So, you know, you can go down and watch, you know, local shows, and, you know, it's two people that, you know, most casual fans have never even heard of. And that can be a good fight. You know, we've got on to Thompson's Boxing here in Ontario, and if they're matched well, a fight's a good fight. And this
Ontario, California, not Canada, for anybody.
Yeah, Terry, California, yeah, to be more precise, yeah. I mean, I thought the fight was okay. I thought we were lucky that it wasn't, you know, scripted like everyone thought it might be. And I thought Tommy won. They gave him the victory, which I thought was good. A little bit tentative at first, and I think that's why we saw a lot of the hugging. And you know, I saw a lot of people were kind of complaining about the referee constantly getting involved and breaking them up. But if he didn't, we would have been complaining about him not breaking them up. And, you know, eventually it did stop. Like, he did do, I thought, the right thing. He kept breaking them. And then eventually they kind of stopped doing it as the fight, you know, kind of wove on, which I thought was good. But I don't know what people expected. It's kind of...
You're not as bothered by the referees, I guess. I don't want to say performance, but the referee's behavior and deducting those points.
He did do it a lot, and I thought they were very strict to take points off so quickly into novice fighters. But I guess there was that many eyeballs on it. When you're the referee, you probably just have to make a decision and stick with it, because it's like anything in life. Some people are going to agree with it and some people are not going to agree with it. So if he was happy and he thought he was justified to do what he's doing, and like, I didn't see him normally. It's like a step approach, right? You kind of warn them verbally and then you may warn them in front of the crowd. Like, hey, next time I'm taking a point. And the whole crowd's like, okay, like he's just told Danny that if he does it again, he's going to take a point. You do it again and then they take a point. You know, and you're kind of like, oh, well, you know, we saw the referee. He did warn Danny that, like, if he did it again, like, you know, that's up to him. There's like a kind of a step approach where he just seemed to jump straight to, like, you know, docking a point from both of them for the fouls. It didn't really affect the fight, though. And I think, you know, we'll probably, if we're complaining about that, then, you know, the fight was obviously wasn't too bad, or else we'd be complaining about the fight, you know. We just always find something to complain about, don't we? And it didn't affect the fight in any way. I thought the right person won. So let's just leave the referee alone. You know, they do a difficult job. So,
because you know how sometimes referees, especially when there's a lot of hugging and, you know, a lot of close contact like that between the fighters, there's some referees that instead of breaking them up will yell at the fighters and say, fight out of it, yeah. Fight out of it. And we'll tell them to do that. And like, they're like, okay, well, he's telling us to fight out of it. So he's not going to break us up. Would you prefer something like that from a referee? Because I don't think this referee really tried that. I might be wrong. You tell me if I'm wrong, if I overlooked something. But sometimes I feel like we maybe would have got another knockdown or more action if he just yelled as you know, you want to warn them, like you said, about the clinching and the hugging and all that stuff. But why not throw it in there like, fight out of it, fight out of it. I'm not going to pull you apart, fight out of it, you know? And then they'll be like, okay, he's tying us and they fight on the inside. I mean, wouldn't you prefer that?
No, 100%. Yeah, it would have been good for him to say that. And then, you know, if they weren't fighting out of it, then, you know, break them up, you know, give them a chance to work it out themselves, essentially, you know, work on the inside. You know, that was, if you remember back to Ricky Hatton and Mayweather, that was the complaint from all the English fans was, you know, Joe Cortez, I believe, kept breaking them straight away, you know, because Ricky was really good on the inside, you know, and everyone was kind of complaining from the UK that, you know, Floyd had probably told Joe Cortez, like, you know, to break them as soon as he can because Ricky was really good at inside fighting, uppercuts, you know, little hooks, stuff like that. And that kind of took, you know, a major part of, I think, Ricky's game plan.
Arsenal.
Yeah, game plan and arsenal away. So, yeah, no, same. Yeah, I mean, I would have liked that, but yeah, Mark Lyson, it was who was the referee from the UK. Yeah, he didn't seem to do that. He seemed to just jump in straight away and maybe wanted them to, you know, stick to some good boxing from the outside, I guess. We'll never know. We don't really see any referees interviewed, do we? So we'd have to just guess of why he decided to break them up straight away every time.
So should we take serious now, Jake Paul, as a professional boxer?
At that level, you know, it's the equivalent of me and you turning pro, right?
I mean,
you
but he seems like he's, I mean, obviously he's a master marketer. He knows how to talk to the camera in interviews. But to me, he seems genuine, like he really wants to give it a shot and keep going. Like, I saw an interview where he did where he says, like, yeah, he's like, I was doing YouTube for so long and then trying to wake up every day and, okay, what's the next video I can do? And then he kind of felt like he hit a ceiling, even though he was doing like 15 million views of a video and all that, you know. And from his words and his descriptions, he feels like boxing is like his new calling. Like, he found something that he's excited for and he really wants to give it a shot. And do we expect that? Do we expect him to long-term? I mean, it's already been a couple of years. This is the first time he's kind of stepped up in boxing competition, if you want to categorize it like that. But 5 years from now, do we still see Jake Paul in boxing?
I don't think so. I don't think 5 years from now. But you got to look at it like he obviously does love it, because you have to really love boxing to be in it, because you're getting punched in the face, the training's hard and stuff like that. But look at it, he did. Let's say he did a 12-week camp to prepare for this, and he'd get ballpark 20 million. Apart from maybe making a movie, where's he going to make that type of money? He's not making that in 3 months, in 12 weeks on YouTube. He's not making that. He's probably not making that in three months.
He
probably
can make it on YouTube. YouTube has a lot of money. There's a lot of creators out there. There's a lot of creators out there who make a lot of money. There's a lot. Yeah,
that's.
I think he was easily surpassing that. I think he was.
No, not on YouTube, surely.
I'm sure. I guarantee you. I've seen some of these creators, these content creators on YouTube, and these personalities and these YouTubers or whatever talk about it, and you know, YouTube has a lot of money. Think about it. So
yeah, I mean, either way, I don't think he'll be there in 5 years. I think he'll probably do the rematch with Tommy, and then you know,
there's a rematch clause. That's right. There's a rematch.
Yeah,
clause.
I mean, I think they'll do the rematch, and I think maybe the UK just to kind of like go over so they can get like Tommy's fans, you know, in the UK, and obviously I'm sure Jake's got a huge amount of fans in the UK as well. Kind of cream
how much,
that.
How much do you think Saudi Arabia would pay to try to bring it back? Do you think they would try to overpay and just say no? Like, we want it back here. Like, we'll double you the purses.
So I was listening to the Fight Disciples today, and Adam Catterall was saying he was working on Talk Sport, which is a radio channel in the UK. And he was saying that his boss told him that they could kind of get a feeler for how many numbers of people are listening in. And he was saying that, like, if the numbers for the pay-per-view are anything like what the amount of people who are listening on TalkSport, it's going to be unbelievable. Probably the biggest pay-per-view in the last year.
Wow. That's impressive.
So maybe the Saudis don't want it back if it was that popular.
It got a lot of attention. And imagine if that fight happened in, like, New York City, Las Vegas, or especially L.A. I feel like if you had it in L.A., there's a lot of celebrities because of the Jake Paul connection. Jake Paul's kind of crossed over or is crossed over. There would have been a lot of celebrities who would have showed up to that fight in Hollywood.
Yeah. I mean, I had random people at work asking me like, hey, did you watch it? What did you think? Do you think Jake should have won? And the only time I ever really get that is the YouTubers and Ryan Garcia.
Yeah. Yeah. And but when that happens, something right is happening for that fighter, because that means that the casual fan is interested. That's where your money's at. Like us hardcore boxing fans, we're watching everything. We're going to be there. But if you get the casual fan to care about you, like some of the biggest stars in the world, like Canelo, Oscar De La Hoya, Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao, those guys, Mike Tyson, all them, that's where your money's at. That's when you elevate yourself into the stratosphere. But when do we see that? Oh, so, like I said, there's a rematch clause for Jake Paul. When do we see it?
Summer.
Yeah, and your money would be in the UK?
Yeah, if it, I don't know. Now thinking about it, like you said, if it was that popular, maybe they'll get them back. Because if you look at, like, Saudi must have spent a lot of money. I mean, I'm sure they paid and flew over, you know, Tyson Fury, you know, Mike Tyson, all of those guys that we saw there. I'm sure they were probably given like planes and tickets and, you know, free accommodation to go over there just to make that, you know, that event so much bigger. And, you know, it seemed like everyone was there. So, you know, they might want to do it again with how popular it seems to have been. It'd be interesting to see what the worldwide pay-per-view did. I wonder if that broke a 750, a million.
Worldwide? You think so?
I'm thinking so, dude. The amount of random people that ask me about it that don't ever talk about boxing. But then piracy, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the bigger the event, also the bigger the piracy.
And the clientele of people that are going to watch that are going to be the tech-savvy younger people that can find a link.
Right. Yeah, Jake Paul fan base. That's true. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
But they all know. When they'll text a friend, hey, I've got a link. All the friends now have it free.
That's completely true. And then going back to, you know, the fans in attendance or the audience there, the celebrities or fighters, Deontay Wilder was in attendance. So was Tyson Fury, but primarily focusing on Deontay Wilder. As I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, we had MSL of Major League Wrestling on, who dropped some news about Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder in the Middle East. Close to a deal at the second half for this year. I mean, if you kind of put the puzzle pieces together, and obviously we're just speculating here, Deontay Wilder being over there, do you think maybe it was to get exposure over there, and also maybe there were some meetings set up, you know, like, hey, I'm here in person, let's talk, you know, AJ fight and all that. Do you think that's possible?
100%. You know, it looks like, you know, a lot of the guys over at the PBC have, you know, out of contract now, and, you know, why wouldn't you put the feelers out and find out, especially when you're Deontay, you know, he's probably not, he's got probably a maximum of what, 2, 3, 4 fights left until he probably retires. You want to try and get the biggest purses. So I'm sure, you know, fighting someone like Anthony Joshua, and it's a winnable fight for him as well, a very winnable fight for him. Why would you not want to get that fight in before you retire? I'm sure it's probably the biggest paying fight for him as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man, that'd be great if that Wilder AJ potential fight was in the United States, even in the UK. But yeah, that's a very exciting fight. Also on the card in the co-main event, Badu Jack wins the third world title in his third, or a world title in his third weight class as a professional, as he becomes the WBC cruiserweight champion of the world with the 12th round TKO over, and I think we pronounced this before, is it Yunga Makabu?
I thought it was Elunga, but
Elunga? Maybe, yeah. It might be Elunga. Elunga Jr. Makabu. Makabu's obviously got a lot of attention. I don't know if it was last year or the year before when Canelo's team, Eddie Reynoso, his trainer, requested from the WBC at their convention a chance to fight the cruiserweight champion of the world in Makabu. I know Canelo took a picture with Makabu, I think around that time or in the convention or something like that. So Makabu got a lot of publicity from that. But Badu Jack defeated him. And I think Badu Jack really showed the level of talent that he had in comparison with Makabu. Because I think Badu Jack really controlled the fight and ended up knocking him down multiple times and eventually got the win in a TKO fashion. What did you think about the fight?
I must have been watching something different because so many people were, you know, oh, what a great fight. Radio Raheem obviously lost his mind and was like, oh, this is one of the greatest fights of the year. I didn't think that. I honestly thought it was two faded fighters. I thought Makabu looked pretty bad. I thought Badu Jack's legs had kind of gone. They were a little bit stiff at times. I just thought it was two older fighters and Badu Jack was just the better, had probably the most left in the tank. And I had to go back through because so many people kept posting about, oh, Makabu, what a great fighter, blah, blah, blah. And I was thinking to myself, I was like, apart from Tony Bellew, like, who's he actually fought that I can remember? So I went back and I looked at his record. He'd fought that Sislak. I think he was top 15 at the time. He fought somebody else that was in the top 15 at the time of when he fought them. And everybody else he'd fought was 72 in the world or below. And I'm talking like, some of them were like, quite several of them were unranked. Some of them were ranked like 640th in the world. So like, you know, they just sold us, I think, as promoters, you know, like Eddie Hearn and all these guys had just sold us, you know, oh, Makabu, fucking great fighter. He's got all these knockouts. Well, yeah, because he's, you know, decent-ish level fighter fighting absolute trash. So like, no wonder he's got all these knockouts. So yeah, you know, it's just, I think he's just one of those guys that had a belt for a long period of time fighting nobody. And, you know, Bellew managed to spark him. That's kind of where he came to, like, most people's, you know, mind when he fought Tony Bellew. And I'm super fucking surprised that somebody's not thrown money at Makabu and Don King before this to get that WBC belt. Now fucking Badu Jack's got it. You know, why didn't Richard Reakpar and Boxer and, like, fucking Lawrence Okolie and people like that throw money at Don King and get this belt a while ago? He's beatable. So, especially on that performance, when he fought someone with a little bit of class left in Badu Jack, it just showed how much of an old man he was.
Yeah, because I thought Badu Jack looked levels above him throughout the fight.
And he's 39 or something.
Yeah, he's been around for a long time. And, yeah, you know, that's very, very interesting, the comparison and contrasting between both of them as fighters. And then Badu Jack, I think we touched on this, well, not during the episode, but we touched on this when we were texting back and forth. Badu Jack, is really loved over there in the Middle East because, you know, he's getting a lot of these fights over there. Every time there's an event, I feel like Badu Jack's always on the card, man. So somebody must really like him over there because he's getting a lot of opportunities over there.
What do you think about that though? 3-weight world champion.
I mean, I think it's legitimate.
You think it's, like, in comparison, that's more of a legitimate 3-weight world
champion? Yeah, I know. I definitely give him credit.
Over, like, the Broner 4-weight world champion?
Yes. Yes. I know. I definitely give him credit. Yeah, you know, I think Jack has been in a lot of wars in his career so far, or even up until this point. I don't know if I mentioned it, but he's won titles at 168, 175, and now cruiserweight 200. I give him credit. Like, he's really been in fight world title fights and he's been a world champion. So, you know, I just think that people just kind of, I don't want to say overlook him, but you just kind of forget about him because he's like, you know, just kind of doing a lot of fights in the Middle East and just being in all these events. But he beat a cruiserweight champion of the world.
He just doesn't have like that flashy, explosive style. And he's always fights where he scrapes through, like the big fights. I mean, because if you look at how many draws he's had, he hasn't had like a whole host of draws. Yeah, three draws.
He's had quite a few draws. I remember that.
Split decisions, majority decisions, stuff like that, where it's just, he's not one of those fighters where you're like, oh, fucking Badu Jack's on. I bet I can't miss this, you know, because he's going to get in there and like, you know, be like a Deontay Wilder where you're like, you can't really look away from the screen because there's going to be like, boom, fight's over. You don't really get that with Badu because when I remembered he was a 2-weight world champion, like I thought he was a 2-weight. And then when they were like, oh, 3-weight, I was like, 3-weight world champion? I was like, whoa. Because there's just so many guys that you can think of in your memory and think, oh, he was a great fighter. And they never achieved that. And in your head, or even now, guys that are still fighting, you probably rate them better than Badu Jack. But his achievements are better.
Just imagine, like, if, for example, like you mentioned, Don King and all these guys, Richard Reactor and stuff, like, if they would have just thrown money and been like, oh, we should have been that to get that title shot. And we could have taken the title off of him. 100%. Like, imagine if you had somebody like Badu Jack who has been at 168, 175 his entire career, go up 25 pounds or so, 20, 25 pounds, and beats the cruiserweight champion of the world, WBC cruiserweight champion of the world. I mean, would you say with fairly ease? I mean,
yeah. You know,
and if you were, let's just say, who pops into mind who's at 175? Dimitri Bivol, Gilberto Ramirez, if you were Golden Boy or Matchroom, would you be looking at that and been like, man, I should have asked Ramirez or Bivol, like, hey, do you want to move to cruiserweight? You can beat this guy and you can get that world title.
Canelo should have done it.
He obviously saw something.
He should have just skipped Bivol and fought Makabu on that performance.
That would have been nuts.
Canelo would have absolutely smoked him.
That would have been nuts, man. And Canelo's essentially a 160 pounder, you know, like that would have been crazy. And people thought he was crazy. Be like, what are you talking about? Cruiserweight? You want to fight the cruiserweight champion of the world, the WBC cruiserweight champion of the world? And I knew Makabu's name wasn't as high profile. And he got the most publicity he's ever gotten from just the Canelo team mentioning his name, requesting a potential fight. And I think, from an honest standpoint, I think it was reasonable for people to think that the weight difference was just too much. Like, okay, well, Canelo overall, pound for pound, might be more talented, but that weight difference is just too much for you, where if you go up that high, it's not going to work. I think that's a reasonable conclusion to think when Canelo's team requested a chance to fight Makabu at the cruiserweight level. But I mean, obviously, we could speculate looking at this loss to Badu Jack, but I think you're right. I think if Canelo maybe would have went to cruiserweight, and I would love to be a fly on the wall and with Canelo and, you know, his team or whoever he was with, If he saw this fight live or once he heard the news and Makabu got stopped, I wonder what he, if people talked to him or to Eddie Reynoso, like, man, we should have, that should have been us. You could have been cruiserweight champion of the world. Could have been champion at 154, 160, 168, 175, 200. That's crazy. That is nuts. But, you know, it is what it is. Now Badu Jack has a, who are the other champions at cruiserweight right now?
Jai Opataya. And I just said his name before, Lawrence Okoli.
Just those three, including Jack?
Yeah, Jack's got, well, the WBC. Jai Opataya has, is it the IBF that he took from? Yeah, he's got the IBF. And then Lawrence Okoli's got the WBC and the WBA, I believe.
Oh, wow. So does, who does Jack, who does Jack fight first?
I think Jack probably knows, like, okay, this is going to be my last roll of the dice. And I think he'll sell it to the highest bidder. And I can probably, it's probably going to be
Lawrence
Okoli.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
Boxer in Sky.
Yeah.
I just think they've got more money than Jai Opataya. Jai Opataya, I can't imagine he's got that much backing and, you know, he's going to be able to afford it. So, you know, it looks like from that, I know, was it the Creed premiere where Lawrence Okoli and Richard Ryakpar kind of had like some fake beef over in the UK, like kind of a little argument outside of there, like WWE style. So it looks like they're going to try and do, you know, Richard Ryakpar, Lawrence Okoli maybe on Boxer to, you know, start like a little feud, that. And then, you know, if that does happen, then I'm sure the winner of that will probably fight Badu Jack. But if I was Lawrence Okoli now, I'd probably be like, hey, sack that off. I want to get the WBC title from Badu Jack. Throw money at him.
Oh, yeah. That's how I would look at it. That's definitely how I would
look at it. I'd be like, hey, Richard Ryakpar's got nothing. See ya. And then I would get, you know, Ben Shalom, throw money at Badu Jack, get him over to the UK, get that WBC title. And then maybe even you'd be like, you know what? Let's do it. Get Jai Opataya, get him over. Undisputed at cruiserweight, nothing less to achieve here, up to heavyweight.
Yeah. What a pathway that would be, huh? Man. Well, moving on. Fight previews this upcoming Saturday, the 4th of March, from the Newcastle Arena in Newcastle. Lewis Ritson, 23-2, goes up against O'Hara.
Either of, yeah. I think people kind of say both, yeah.
O'Hara Davis. Davies. It's Davies, right?
I think Davis is the way how we the don't Davis? Say in the UK, yeah.
Okay. O'Hara Davis, 24-2. What do you think about this fight? I like this fight.
Yeah, it's not a bad fight. You know, it's O'Hara Davis kind of been off, you know, out in limbo from, I would say, a lot of the big fights since like 2020 when he fought Tyrone McKenna. So it's going to be interesting to see him get back in there with, you know, someone of a similar stature, I would say, like over in the UK. Both of them are well-known, you know, to the casual fans at home. So it's going to be interesting to see what, you know, Lewis Ritson has left, to see what, you know, Davis has left. Davis is actually pretty, you know, highly ranked as well. So it's going to be an interesting one because O'Hara Davis at times can absolutely stink out the room because he's just got super long arms, can just sit back, kind of use his jab, kind of like fumble his way through fights, whereas, you know, Ritson is kind of the opposite, really. He can box at times, but he's a little bit more of a banger. So it's going to be an interesting clash of styles, and let's hope that, you know, Davis doesn't, you know, decide to kind of stink out the room. And because he's done it a few fights where he thought he's ahead on the cards, he's gone in there being super, super negative and actually lost and then come out complaining. So it's going to be interesting to see what O'Hara we get because he's a little bit hot and cold.
Who wins?
Oh man,
wow. I think Davis beats him.
I don't know. I like Lewis Ritson. He's a northern guy like myself, but
let's take away the bias, though. Let's take away the implicit bias, Mike. Come on.
No, I might go Ritson. I think Ritson maybe wins it because he's just been in with the better pedigree of opponents recently. Davis has kind of had, you know, a good fight, and then he goes away, fights quite a lot of like unknown people, probably to keep him busy, keep him in the win column, and then he comes back and has another big one. And Davis just changes trainers so much, and he's kind of like his whole like boxing career is kind of like a bit of a mess. I think Ritson is a little bit more stable, you know, fights fairly regularly, always in with pretty decent, you know, people. Look at his last few fights, Robert Davis Jr., Miguel Vasquez, obviously we know him, Jeremias Ponce. Ponce was the guy that we just talked about fighting the other night. Dejan Zlatikin, obviously we remember him because Mikey...
He's still...
Yeah.
He's still around?
He fought him last year, yeah.
But man, I remember the first time I really got wind of Dejan Zlatichinin. Oh, I don't even know how to...
So, yeah.
I've heard his name pronounced different ways. Zlatichinin, I think it's something like that, was when Mikey Garcia took his title.
Yeah, yeah, 2017.
Yeah, yeah. That was the first time I really became aware of him. And I think that fight was in Vegas. I think I was at that fight. Because I think Mikey Garcia knocked him out and took his title. So
he has a few. If you look at his record, remember Peter Petrov?
Yeah.
Dejan beat him. Ricky Burns, obviously well-known in the UK. Dejan beat him. Ivan Redcatch.
Oh, he beat Redcatch too?
Yeah, back in 2015.
Wow. So he's been around, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would
go. So you think Ritson's taking it?
Yeah, I think maybe just a little bit more consistent of, you know, high-level opponents, a little bit more settled, like, in and outside of the ring. And I think that will probably help Ritson. If O'Hara wins, I can see it just being a stinker. Just uses his jab. Very boring.
Yeah, that makes sense. Also on the card, former guest on the show, previous guest on the show, Thomas Patrick Ward, 33-0-1, goes up against Otabek Komatov, 10-0, also undefeated. Actually, I don't think Ward is undefeated, right? I think he has one loss. What do you think about this fight?
Thomas Patrick Ward all day. Big fan of Ward. I think he just needs a chance at the big time. You know, eventually he's been on, what, 33 wins, zero losses and a draw. You know, how long does he have to wait? I understand that he's just a super good boxer, only 5 KOs, so he's not necessarily good for TV. And maybe that's the point that why he's not got the chance against the world title. So we just need him to be backed. You know, hopefully eventually, you know, one of the big promoters will get a hold of him and just throw some money at him because, he is good to watch, even though he's not got, you know, the knockout power, just a really, really, really good boxer. Got a very good, you know, kind of like amateur style, bounces around, very slick, fast, good pop as well. Just doesn't really get in there and finish them off. I think Patrick Ward wins, gets his 34th victory. Let's hope sooner rather than later. We've been saying it for so long. He eventually gets a world title shot.
I mean, 33 victories. He's up there. You know, I think he's been due for one. So we will see. Also, this upcoming Saturday from Ontario, California, at the Toyota Arena. Excuse me, I was going to call it the Ontario Arena, the Toyota Arena, for the WBC Interim Featherweight Championship of the World. Brandon Figueroa goes up against Mark Magsayo. I like this fight. I think this is a very, very competitive fight. I don't know who wins this fight. I'm leaning towards Figueroa, but I think this is a at least on paper, it's a competitive fight. What do you think?
It is a good fight. It is a good fight. Man.
I'm leaning towards Figueroa as of right now.
Yeah, it's... I love watching Figueroa just because he throws so many punches. Magsayo, though, is pretty, you know, got some power. He's a pretty powerful guy. You know, he's got, I think it's 16 knockouts and 24 wins. Last time out, he came unstuck when he fought the giant, you know, Ray Vargas, over split decision over 12, which kind of goes to show you, you know, even against the big guys, you know, Magsayo can do it. Oh, man. You know, I'm going to go Magsayo. I think Magsayo might actually catch him and take him out.
You think he stops him?
Yeah,
I think regardless, this fight ends in a TKO or KO stoppage.
If Figueroa wins, it would be more of a referee stoppage. because I think Figueroa kind of relies more on combinations, you know, than really just having that one punch puts you out to sleep style. But, you know, even him, what, 23 wins, one loss, one draw, 18 KOs. So between them, what's that, 34 KOs? Yeah, so I don't see, he's probably not going to go to 12 now we've seen that. But I think Magasayo might catch him and take him out late on. It's a good matchup, though.
Yeah, it's a good matchup.
Yeah,
it's on Showtime. So hopefully it gets pretty strong ratings, because I know Showtime, at least with all the moves happening over there, I'm sure the big bosses at CBS and Paramount are watching closely on the boxing side to see how it's performing. But from a hardcore boxing standpoint, this is a great matchup. And I think if we had to guess, for as long as it goes, even if it does go 12 rounds, it should be an exciting fight. And it's obviously a lower weight class, 126 pounds. And we all know that the lower weight classes always throw a bunch of punches. Like you said, Figueroa throws a lot.
Yeah.
So it's a good matchup. Good matchup. It is for the interim featherweight championship in the world. So who currently holds?
Fulton.
Stephen Fulton, right?
Yeah.
But he's the one trying to fight.
It was talking about fighting Inoue.
Right. At 122, right?
Yeah, it's not. I think Inoue was going to move up just to test the water against Fulton. As far as I know, I don't think it's been 100% agreed. There's nothing on BoxRec yet. So it's kind of, I think WBC just want 3% of the purse, because there's no reason for a WBC. Fulton's not injured. And there's no other fight confirmed. But Figueroa used to be the WBC champion. And I'm sure the WBC just want to get another 3% from this fight.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Interim. I was like, why would you put an interim?
Yeah, and I mean, essentially, they're normally there for like people.
Fulton's a champion.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be that you'd only really see an interim if, you know, the champion was injured for a long period of time and they didn't want the division to come to a standstill. But
it's also on television. It's a lot easier. I mean, we've known this and we've been told this by very, very reputable people in the sport, fighters, managers, a lot of reputable people in the sport that, you know, makes sense. And like we talked about on our bonus episode on the other one this week with MSL, if there's a title fight, if there's a world title attached, any type of championship attached that you can use to market it, it helps the broadcast. So Showtime, you know, we've been told that, like, hey, no, like they want some type of title attached to the broadcast so they can be able to market it. Like, oh, this is a WBC world title fight, interim world title fight. So the casual fans checking it out, like, oh, wow, this is a world championship fight. So this is a big fight. You know, these guys are world class. You know, sometimes that's all it takes. But in this case, you know, this is a way to, I guess, put this person at number two, the winner of Magsayo and Figueroa, to face Fulton or whoever the full WBC featherweight champion is. But either way, ignoring that situation, this is a great matchup. I'm looking forward to it. So you're going Magsayo, I'm going Figueroa. I think it does end by KO or TKO. But either way, for as long as it lasts, I think it should be an exciting matchup. Also on the card, Jared Swift Hurd, 24-2, goes up against Jose Armando Rencides, 13-1. What do you think about this fight?
Good to see, you know, Hurd back. You know, ever since he lost to Julian Williams, he's kind of done one fight a year, one fight 2019. 2020 for Francisco Santana, 2021 Luis Arias, and then this year, well, took the whole of 2022 off, and then came back in a bit of a gimme fight. Jose Armando Rencides hasn't really fought anybody of Jarrett Hurd's caliber. Most of his fights have just been over in Mexico against, you know, kind of gimme fights. So big step up for him. So I'll just have to see, you know, what Rencides does. Is he going to come to spring a surprise? Or has he just come for a payday against Jarrett Hurd? And it's just going to have to see what Jarrett Hurd's got left. Is, you know, does he still want it after having a few slip-ups you know, in his last few fights. So it's good to see him back, though. He's always kind of been a bit of a fan favorite, hasn't he? His like all action style.
He definitely throws it all out there.
Yeah, he's good TV fighter.
Also on the card, Terrell Geisha. Is it Terrell or Terrell?
I always say Terrell.
I think it's Terrell. Terrell Geisha, 22-3-1, and goes up against Brandon Lynch, 12-1-1. What do you think about this fight?
I've always liked watching Geisha. I think he's got a very good style, very good flashy style. Just at times has little bits of lacks of concentration in his defense and kind of gets caught. And that's really been, I think, his downfall so far. You know, his losses have always become against good fighters, though, if you look at it. Arizandy Lara, top fighter. Erickson Lubin, still on his way up, but, you know, very good fighter. And then
still
Tim
a young guy, too. Well, Lubin is. But
yeah.
How old is Hurd?
Jarrett Hurd?
Yes.
Hurd, I don't think he's that old because he hasn't been around. Doesn't have his age on his box rec. He debuted in 2012. So what's that, 11 years? So he's probably early 30s.
Probably. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. I know Lubin's young. Lubin still might be maybe 30 or 29 or something like that.
Yeah, because when those two fought, he was kind of like the prospects, wasn't it? They were fighting each other. You know, which one's going to go to the top and, you know, which one's kind of going to have to rebuild. And you know, Lubin ended up beating him on points. But yeah, Lubin's 27.
Oh, even younger than I thought.
Yeah, but Geisha, I think this is a fight you should win. Lynch is similar sort of resume to Rezindaz, really. A lot of just kind of like local fights. Most of those have been against opponents that, you know, Geisha would pretty much whip. And I think this is the same sort of thing. Get Geisha back into the win column, kind of rebuild him, which is good. I mean, I like his style. I think he's good to watch. Another one that I think is, you know, good for TV. I think these three fights to kind of close out the show will be you know, really good. Hopefully we get a good sellout crowd because me and you are both going to be there.
We are. So if you see us, say hi. News and notes section of this week's episode of The Last Round. Former heavyweight champion Andy Ruiz, there was reports that he had parted ways with PBC Premier Boxing Champions, which was, I think, Andy Ruiz Sr., his dad, had told ESPN. But then Andy Ruiz Jr. came out, I believe, and said that he was still being advised by Al Haymon. He was just no longer with PBC, but he was still having Al Haymon involved. So how do we interpret that? What do you think?
I mean, with what people keep saying about all these different fighters, like leaving PBC, the now free agents, I think that it could be the end of, you know, PBC and like Showtime, and I know they're going to move over to Paramount. So I don't know whether Al's looking at, you know, kind of covering himself, and, you know, he's going to like move into management or something like that. And you don't kind of manage a lot of these fighters, you know, if PBC, you know, does, you know, kind of die a death, which, you know, seems to be rumored. But I suppose, you know, only time will tell. I think even Steven Espinoza brought out something today about, you know, how some of these new platforms, I think, like hinted at DAZN and guys like that, have been throwing around too much money and stuff, and that's affected the whole boxing sphere. So I think he's trying to, you know, push it back onto somebody else. But, you know, I think Al Haymon kind of did that himself, right? From what all the fighters were saying about the purses they were getting.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. But I mean, I think it's if we're speculating here, maybe Andy Ruiz and Al Haymon, you know, they know, like, okay, Showtime might be sunsetting here. Our partnership with them might be sunsetting. So we're going to have to find you and other fighters, like a Wilder or something, other opportunities, possibly with DAZN or maybe Sky or ESPN or something. But Al Haymon will still be, you know, in the shadows helping these fighters. So that's pretty much how I understand it. So, I mean, which, hey, if it works, if these fighters are happy with it, what are you supposed to do? You know, if there's any type of silver lining of Showtime kind of sunsetting from the boxing business, like HBO did about 5 or 6 years ago, it's that windows and openings will be opened essentially to other cross-promotional events with other broadcasters and promoters. So, unfortunately, you know, hopefully Showtime doesn't sunset and go away, you know, because them and HBO were like the pillars of boxing TV, boxing broadcast. But, you know, it seems like the writing's on the wall. But we'll see. We'll see how it develops in the next couple months, how that all comes about. Also, Tank Davis and Ryan Garcia have officially announced on their social media handles that they'll meet April 22nd of this year in Las Vegas. No specific location as of this recording and as of their announcement has been announced. So it could be T-Mobile. I looked at the T-Mobile, has no date. There's no events going on, I think, on that date in T-Mobile. I believe it, MGM Grand has no dates on that, has no reserved dates on April 22nd. Mandalay Bay, I don't think I've looked at that. But so as of right now, they just said it's going to be in Las Vegas. So I'm sure they're kind of still finalizing where the location is at before the promoters and all that kind of do an official announcement. But both fighters have already announced. So everybody take that as some type of confirmation that, okay, they both announced it, it's signed. Let's just hope that nobody gets hurt and they both make it to April 22nd and get in the ring. That's when it becomes completely real. So Ryan Garcia had initially tweeted from his side that it was on Showtime pay-per-view, but then he edited his tweet and put that it was a Showtime and DAZN pay-per-view, essentially together. And then I think Joe Markowski, who's a vice president at DAZN, has said that if DAZN is also offering pay-per-view, so it's some type of partnership. But then we've also seen some rumblings that it's just a Showtime pay-per-view. DAZN has rights, but not in the U.S. or something. I don't know. As of right now, there's not clear detail what's going on with the whole broadcast. We just know it's some type of pay-per-view. It seems like Showtime will be the leading broadcaster, but there's some type of partnership there. So, you know, we will see. Do you think it's a partnership of pay-per-views for both of them, or do you think Showtime is the lead here?
It wouldn't surprise me if Showtime were the lead. I know that supposedly the contract took so long to get done because Showtime wanted kind of like they wanted the first pay-per-view, they wanted the second pay-per-view. They were really, really playing hardball. So, I mean, as long as we get it, and I'll believe it the day that I'm sat either in the T-Mobile or I'm sat at home with it on and Ryan's in one corner, Javonte's in the other corner, and the referee's like, you know, boom, fight, or, you know, whatever. Whatever's said, because, you know, when Javonte gets in trouble with, you know, the law, and, you know, Ryan's pulled out with several fights. So please, 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 after waiting all of this time, let's just see it, you know, April 22nd.
Where do you think, as of right now, what's the venue in Vegas? I don't think it goes to T-Mobile. I think it goes to MGM Grand or Mandalay Bay.
I would like to, for nostalgia, because it's, you know, it's a pretty big fight. There's a different feeling when we've attended fights, you know, in the Mandalay Bay and the MGM compared to the T-Mobile. T-Mobile's kind of like, I don't know, just so big and open. It's not the same. It's not the same.
Yeah, I mean, they're fun fights. They're fun events, T-Mobile Arena, but you're right. I think because our personal bias as boxing fans, there were so many great events at MGM Grand, especially, and Mandalay Bay.
Just feels different as well. But
it's a different atmosphere, yeah. You know? I mean, so from our personal opinion, we would love to see it at one of those, preferably MGM Grand. But also, you also got to think about it. If they put it at one of those properties, Mandalay or MGM, I think that the hotels, that the deals that are involved with the event and everything is all MGM properties. Whereas if you put it at T-Mobile Arena, I don't think there's like exclusive deals like that or something. So, so if you have it at an MGM property, they're, you know, assuming it's a big fight, they're going to have their lobbies decorated with posters and, you know, they're going to help with the marketing, which is very important. So
get the chips, have the picture of the fight.
Exactly. So
Fighter arrivals at the hotel, like the whole fight looks different. Yeah.
Yeah. It's that's a big thing to promoters and broadcasters. You know, it makes the event feel 10 times bigger. So we'll see. We'll see how it all turns out. But we got an official announcement from both fighters. So, like you said, it becomes completely real when they're both in the ring on April 22nd. So let's see how that goes from here. And then your favorite and mine, Conor Benn, will return to the WBC welterweight rankings after the WBC found that his, quote, documented and highly elevated consumption of eggs was a reasonable explanation, end quote, for the boxer's adverse finding for the performance-enhancing drug clomiphene. Is that how you say it? Clomiphene? WBC said that in a statement last week. Give me your reaction to that. What do you think?
Wasn't surprising, was it? You know,
it wasn't surprising when we saw it. It was not surprising to me. I mean, people were so like, "Oh my god, this is ridiculous!" Like, were you really surprised? Would you really think that the WBC was going to be like, "Oh no, you're suspended for 2-3 years or something"? You know, like this wasn't surprising at all. I was looking forward to whatever the explanation was going to be. And I think that's what took a lot of the attention here, was the whole eggs excuse. But the whole decision was not surprising. It wasn't surprising that the WBC kind of gave him a pass, if you want to call it that.
No, but I don't think we were surprised, you know, same as you. I think we were all trying to wonder, you know, what excuses got him off. You know, the first rumor doing the rounds was him and his team were trying to say that the VADA process contaminated it. And then that obviously seemed to fall flat in its face. And then, you know, somehow they came up with this, you know, excuse that, you know, the farmers were injecting their chickens and stuff like that with clomiphene, which then affects, you know, which makes them more fertile, so they lay eggs pretty much all year round. And then that was how he managed to get clomiphene into his system, because he was eating, what, 30 eggs a day or something that people keep saying. So, I'm sure anyone that's listening to this, you know, is a big boxing fan. And, you know, the stuff that we've seen with other fighters, you know, like Canelo, Tyson Fury, you know, back in the day when was it Danny Garcia and was it Marquez, like, who tested positive and they just let the fight go ahead? Who else was it? Oscar Valdez recently obviously had that fight in Arizona where the WBC said that, oh, it's fine, you know, fight week, and then they let him fight. So, nothing, I think, surprises us for people that have, you know, been following boxing for many years.
So Conor Benn released a statement earlier today in response to all this.
More like a book. It wasn't really a statement.
Actually, you're right. It was a huge statement. So there's, and I'll give credit to Michael Benson here of TalkSport.com, because he highlighted a sentence here. There's a sentence that says, quote, cheaters should be caught and punished, but people like me who prove their innocence should be vindicated and allowed to continue their career. What's your reaction to that, Mike?
I did read part of his statement because it was so long. And the bit that did make me kind of think was the fact that he said that I could have just have accepted it, you know, taken a pretty much like a backdated 6-month ban and gone about my career. But then he said something on the lines of like, but I've spent all this time fighting it and all this money fighting it, you know, to clear my name. So I was kind of like, okay, I can see where you're coming from there. I mean, I still don't believe him still, but I'm sure he just did that obviously to save face, I guess, because obviously some of those huge fights that he can have, you know, because Eddie Hearn's already said in the, you know, IFL interview that they're trying to chase a fight with Manny Pacquiao over in Dubai, which I'm sure is going to be a, you know, a great payday. And I'm sure that's why the WBC have, you know, cleared him as well, so he can fight for some WBC trinket over in Dubai and they get 3% of a, you know, big fat payday again.
And I don't know if you mentioned it right now, but Conor Benn, even though he has his WBC suspension lifted, as of right now, as of this recording, he still remains unable to compete in the UK because he's banned by the British Boxing Board of Control, right?
Not true. He doesn't have a license. They can't ban him. He hasn't. He remember, if you remember, he gave up his license. So they can't ban him because one, it wasn't a British test. It wasn't a UK AD test that was positive. It was a VADA test.
So if he wants it, if he requests it back, he can get it back.
No, I think they've already said that if he doesn't apply, they're going to reject it right now, I think. But as far as I know, I think they're doing some type of investigation into it. But he could always fight in America. And Eddie's already said they're looking at, I think it was Dubai or Saudi Arabia for the Manny Pacquiao. So we'll...
That's nuts.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, it is what it is. And also, ESPN has reported, I think Mike Coppinger, it might have been Mike Coppinger, or ESPN in general. Josh Taylor and Teofimo Lopez have reportedly agreed to a deal for Josh Taylor's WBO junior welterweight title on June 10th in New York City, which will be on ESPN, ESPN Plus. I'm not sure if this would be an ESPN pay-per-view or not. I don't think it will be. I think it'd just be a regular broadcast, which is great for fans. I'm a fan of this. I think this would be, this is an exciting fight. I think Taylor, assuming he can make 140, I think that's a very, very serious concern leading up to this fight. That is Taylor going to be able to make 140 pounds, or is there going to be an issue? What do you think?
I'm assuming that he must know that he can make it because it's been that long since the Jack Catterall fight. He's had a good amount of time to, you know, test it and move up and, you know, get a dietitian in and stuff like that. So we'll... Yeah. I'm assuming he's looked at that, right? He'd be foolish not to, you know, if he's going to get in there with someone like Teofimo Lopez and he's, you know, struggled to make weight and he's all... you know, used a sauna and taken all the water out with him. He's putting himself in a very dangerous position to get in there with someone like Teofimo Lopez, who is heavy-handed. So, you know, hopefully common sense comes into play and, you know, he's able to make it, you know, very, you know, successfully and, you know, healthily. That doesn't put him in any sort of danger, because that's a great fight. And I do wonder, are they doing the big room? Are they doing the small room? Is it ESPN or is it ESPN pay-per-view? Because I know that we spoke about it before. Teofimo Lopez and his dad did say that they did have like a, was it four-fight contract with one of those being a pay-per-view?
Do you think they really do? Or do you think they just say that just for marketing?
I don't think Teofimo Cena says any lies, Danny. I think he's...
I don't think this is going to be a pay-per-view. I really don't.
I don't see Josh Taylor being a big enough draw in the US for it to be, but we've seen, who was it? Luis Ortiz and Prince Charles.
Yeah, but that's different though. That was a Fox pay-per-view, and Fox Fox had reportedly already told, was it a Fox pay-per-view?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fox had reportedly told like PBC, like, hey, we're not going to put on any more of these fights on free TV. Like, you know, you have to make the money back. So that's why a lot of these pay-per-views were coming, even with Showtime. But, you know, it's because the networks were kind of upset, like, hey, let's make the money back. So, I mean, we'll see.
Big room?
I don't think so. I think it's the theater. Wow. Could be wrong, but I would, as of right now, I would bet the theater.
The theater and just on ESPN?
Yeah. We never know. Could be wrong. Once again, guys, we appreciate you guys listening to this week's episode of the Last Round Podcast. As I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, go ahead and listen to our bonus edition with our guest of the week in Mr. St. Laurent of Major League Wrestling, MLW, which airs on Reels every week. His initials, he also goes by MSL. I think you can follow him on Twitter at MSL. Obviously, he made the boxing circle news because of his tweet of Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder reportedly being close to a deal for a fight in the second half of 2023 in the Middle East somewhere. He breaks down all of that, his fandom as a boxing fan being involved, to a very, very specific point. in his career so far. It was very, very eye-opening to hear his explanation of his involvement in boxing, which was very, very interesting. So go ahead and check that out. It's a very, very intriguing interview. Excuse me, I said avenue. I'm too tired today. I'm too tired. Two shows today. Pretty busy for you guys, giving you double the dosage here this week. But before we completely sign off, Mike, once again, let them know where they can find us and follow us.
At The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. Be sure to join us next week. We'll be previewing Callum Smith against Paul Stepien, and also Tim Zhu against Tony Harrison is over in Australia. So we'll be previewing that.
Looking forward to that fight, definitely. So for once again, from my co-host Michael Shepard, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.